Wednesday, April 9th. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Cherry.
Yes.
In preparing for this show today, you know, I was thinking a lot about the season finale of The White Lotus, a show we both love a lot. Look, that show's about vacation. A lot of people, that's the biggest expense they have in a given year, going on vacation, right? Mm-hmm. So should you go on vacation this year? Should you buy that car? Should you buy that iPhone? All of these questions now circulating in our brains because of the tumult in the economy. So today we're talking about how you, yes, you should respond to economic uncertainty. We have two great guests with us, and we're asking you, how are you dealing with economic uncertainty? Are you adjusting your budget or changing your future plans? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org, or if you're on YouTube, hello, drop a comment right there in the chat.
True confession.
Yes.
I refuse to look at my 401k.
Yeah. A lot of people doing that.
But I'm lucky because I'm not retiring anytime soon.
Right.
It's a different situation for people who are just a couple years away from retirement.
Or already retired.
They're in retirement. So we're going to look at it from different perspectives. And I really hope that our listeners call in and participate today.
Yeah, that would be great. If you have questions, we have, again, two great experts with us who can, you know, maybe sort the hype mm-hmm. from the reality.
Help us deal with the anxiety, too.
Yep.
Put a plan together. I feel like when I put a plan together and I have an action item list of things to do, I calm down.
Yes.
Yeah. So
888-477-9499 or calmly email us studio2@whyy.org. Go a trio of local news stories.
Yes.
Jenny, start us off.
So first story, El Carnaval de Puebla in South Philadelphia has been canceled. This is the Mexican cultural festival. It draws people from all over the country. It was scheduled for April 27th, but organizers decided to nix it due to fears that ICE might target attendees for immigration arrests. This story came from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Organizers say that people are scared. They don't want to participate. They're afraid that ICE, that's customs officers, immigration customs officials, would be there waiting. Philadelphia has a huge Mexican-American community, and the carnival has a rich 20-year history. It's one of the biggest celebrations of Mexican-American culture. People dress up. There's music. There's food. I know you live in South Philly. Oh, I live there.
It's a wonderful
event. It's big.
Event.
Yeah. And for some folks, they told the Inquirer that it's like Christmas for them. But with this mass deportation effort, they canceled it. They also canceled it during the first Trump administration for very similar reasons. A lot of nerves, anxiety.
And look, this is a very obvious manifestation mm-hmm. of something that lots of experts tell us is happening below the surface, which is people who are immigrants to this country, undocumented, mixed status, are retreating from society, mm-hmm. not going to work, not filing taxes because of fear of immigration enforcement. If you don't know South Philadelphia like we do, there is a large Mexican-American community there. Specifically, mm-hmm. many of those people originate from a state called Puebla, which is near Mexico City. It's mm-hmm. in central Mexico. And so this was a celebration for that specific community that brought people from Puebla who live in the U.S., from different parts of the U.S., to South Philadelphia. People from Puebla are responsible for reviving and maintaining great cultural treasures like the Italian market in South Philadelphia. They're a huge part of the economic and cultural vibrancy of South Philadelphia, specifically that corner of it. And so it's not just not having one festival. If that group of people retreats from society writ large, what happens to that neighborhood? What happens to Philadelphia?
Yeah.
And that's a question you have to ask yourself.
You do. And I mean, Philadelphia has about 47,000 residents who are undocumented. There are over 150,000 in the state of Pennsylvania, 440,000 undocumented people in New Jersey. So we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people here.
Yep. It's a huge community. Story number two now, Cherry, you're going to set us up for this one as well. Takes us from South Philadelphia over to West Philadelphia.
Yes. The conservative healthcare nonprofit Do No Harm has filed a lawsuit against Penn Medicine and WURD Radio over its Black Doctor's Directory.
Black Doctor's Directory. Okay.
The group claims that the directory violates Title VI of the Civil Rights Act by discriminating against white doctors.
So what is the Black Doctor's Directory?
So people probably wonder, yes. Black Doctor's Directory, it was launched in 2024 by Penn Medicine and WURD to connect individuals from underserved communities with black doctors. You're probably wondering, why do they need to do this? Well, the argument is that these doctors would provide culturally competent care and address some of the racial health disparities in the city. And I used to cover this when I was a reporter. Black residents face higher risk of chronic conditions, childbirth complications, premature death compared to white residents. And so the thought is that if you get doctors who have an understanding of the experience, you'll get better care and hopefully yes. close some of the gaps. Well, Stanley Goldfarb, who heads Do No Harm, says, you know, and a former dean at Penn's Medical School, by the way, former associate dean.
Which is interesting.
Says he does not see the benefit to linking black people to black doctors. And he called it demeaning and wrong and a misuse of taxpayer dollars.
And he's saying it's a violation of federal law.
Yeah.
And we'll see. This was, I guess, one of the possibilities, one of the Pandora's boxes that could have been opened by all of the legislation around admissions to higher education, right? Mm-hmm. It seems like these two things, in my mind, legally are connected, because once you say that's not allowed, does that mean something like this, which is not admissions to the school, but it's a project that's funded or organized yeah. by the school. Is that also a violation of those same, you know, civil rights laws? I'm not a lawyer. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But it does seem like we're kind of following down a path that has been set up by those prior decisions by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, all of that. There's a very anti-DEI sentiment.
Yes.
A lot of schools getting investigated because of DEI, and they're, you know, pointing to this. Also, Penn gets about $1 billion a year from the federal government.
So even though it is itself a private entity, that federal money is what, I guess, creates the opening for a lawsuit
this. That's what they're accusing, yes.
All right, well, story number three now. Gonna depart from, I guess we're going back to South Philadelphia, actually. We started in South Philly. Mm-hmm. We went to West. Let's go back to South now. This is big news.
All right. Do you need a drum roll?
No, tell me what you need.
Okay.
The cheese war is over, Cherry.
Oh, there was a war? I didn't know.
The cheese war is over, and Cooper Sharp has won.
Okay.
Do you know what Cooper Sharp is,
by the way? I do not know what Cooper Sharp. Break it down.
Cooper Sharp is a type of American cheese. It's a little denigrating to call it American cheese because it does taste quite a bit better than a Kraft Singles, but it's a brand of American cheese. And over the last 5 years, it has kind of gone viral as a cheesesteak cheese. Lots of cheesesteak places are using Cooper Sharp on their cheesesteaks. This started with a restaurant, a takeout spot called Angelo's in Bella Vista. They made it really popular about 5 years ago. And since then, people all over the region have started to use Cooper Sharp cheese.
Wow.
And I say the war is over because of this. The legendary sandwich stand, John's Roast Pork, in deep South Philly.
I know exactly where it is. I've been over there, near the tracks.
They have announced, according to the Enquirer, that they will start to use Cooper Sharp cheese as one of the options on their cheesesteak. It won't just be provolone anymore. So this is one of the tentpole cheesesteak places in the city saying, we give up. We will yield to the demand of the people and allow Cooper Sharp
Give
the people what they want.
Wow.
You've never tasted this cheese.
I've never tasted this cheese. I mean, full disclosure, I don't eat a lot of cheesesteaks. I'm more of a chicken cutlet person, but I do like the roast pork sandwiches.
Yes.
So, I mean, but I just don't eat a lot of beef.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you could have this on a chicken cheesesteak.
I guess I could. But, you know, you pique my interest. As long as it's not Wiz, because I can't stand Wiz, I'm willing to try it.
Our producers asked us, who is Cooper? Cooper is the brand. I don't know. The original Cooper was some guy. I think I.B. Cooper or something like that.
So what does this cheese taste like? Any
ideas? It's sort of like a nuttier, more cheddary American cheese. So it's a blend, but what they blend into it makes it taste a little less like that plasticky, rubbery American cheese.
I don't like that plasticky.
Yes, and it tastes a little bit, it's sharper, I would say, than the typical American cheese. But it is an American cheese.
So it's going to give Sharp Provolone a run for their money now.
People it have already multiple is. Choices. It's okay. already happening, Cherry. The revolution is afoot.
The cheese revolution.
You're behind the time. Speaking of cheese, Yes. Speaking of cheddar.
Mm-hmm. Money.
Our show's about money today. You like that transition?
That was really good.
That was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I did have that one lined up, I will confess. Look, it's no secret. The stock market is all over the place, mostly down. There's a lot of fear among people with a lot of credibility that we are headed toward a recession.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it will happen, mm-hmm. but it certainly, you have to say at this point, is a possibility. So what should you do? You at home.
We need a plan.
So how are you dealing with economic uncertainty? Are you adjusting your budget? Are you changing your future plans? We want to hear from you this hour. Call 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Or if you're on YouTube, drop a comment right there in the chat. We'll be right back. Do not go anywhere. You're listening to Studio 2 on WHYY.
But you seem to have to hop around from store to store. The prices are outrageous at one place, and you just got to find something that's, works on your budget. David from Haddon Township, New Jersey.
I'm pessimistic. Yes, I am. I think it's going to go on as long as Trump is president. Marsha, I'm from Philadelphia.
We're used to spending close to $400 for a whole month. Now it's a little bit more than that. It's like $450, $475, depending on what it is that we buy. But we have cut back a little bit on certain things that we could do without Lavelle, Philly.
Just cereal. A little small box of cereal is like $10. I'm Nathaniel. I'm from Philly, born and raised.
And in Philadelphia, you are listening to WHYY 90.9. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And you just heard from people talking to our producer Andreas in Philadelphia's Old City yesterday. The markets are still reeling today from President Trump's tariffs. Fears of a recession seem to be growing. And many Americans have watched their 401ks nosedive in the last few days. And some people, like me, too scared to look.
Understandable. And besides the stock market losses, Americans have been dealing with higher food prices, and now it seems like a lot of other things are going to cost a lot more. Cars, electronics, clothing, gas, housing. So this hour, we're asking, what should we be doing? How should we respond to all this financial instability and uncertainty? We have two guests with us to share some advice, hopefully stop us from hoarding toilet paper again. Michelle Singletary is the personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And Wendy De La Rosa is an assistant professor of marketing at the Wharton School. Wendy, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yes. And our question for you at home and listening, how are you dealing with the economic uncertainty? Are you adjusting your budget or are you changing future plans? You can call us 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to leave your comments in the chat.
Let me start with a comment from Stan, who says, I just stocked up on non-perishable groceries such as canned soups. I don't drink coffee, so I won't be affected by the new coffee tariffs. I heard that Republicans now want to apply a tariff to prescription drugs, so I checked each of my prescriptions. Fortunately, they're all made in America. Michelle, you hear that comment from Stan, and I guess the question I have off of it is this what we should be doing, like going a checklist of the things that we buy and evaluating whether they're going to be tariff affected or not?
Yeah, I think the big ticket items you want to evaluate, because that's where you're going to have to spend more money. If you were in the market to get a car, your clunker is just done. Then I would go ahead and pull it, you know, go ahead and buy that vehicle because it is going to be expensive and significantly so. I don't think people should be hoarding things in their pantry. You know, as you mentioned at the top of the show, you know, like toilet paper and paper towels. And maybe you need toilet paper, but paper towels, you can grab a towel. So, I'm very judicious when I good use toilet paper. But the point is, you don't want to have your money in your pantry because if you lose your job, you're going to need that cash to pay your rent. So you want to look at if you got big stuff that's going to cost you an extra, you know, thousands of dollars. Yes, if you were already in a poised to buy it. Otherwise, I would say definitely pull back, particularly if you are already living paycheck to paycheck or you are in an industry that you feel might have some job losses. Mm.
Yeah. And I just wonder, so I just want to sort of calibrate and say, is it really this bad? Like, and I try my best not to freak out, you know, Wendy, and I'm saying to myself, is it really as bad as the market seems to be? Have we been through something like this before? Is this the moment to freak out?
Well, I'll answer this by saying people's sentiment is not to be ignored. So when we look at consumer sentiment over the last 3 months, it's been declining every single month. And this was before our Liberation Day on April 2nd when the tariffs were announced. People have the right and should feel scared. As Avi mentioned, prices have been increasing. We've had the great egg shortage of 2025, right? It's a shocker to see $16 for 12 eggs. And on top of that, now people's 401ks, anybody who's on a pension, anybody who's invested in the stock market, you know, your portfolio is down 15-20%. The Federal Reserve has cut our GDP outlook. And so to tell people, look, everything's going to be okay, when every single indicator around us is telling us things are not going to be okay, that's sort of gaslighting, right? Yeah. That's like, being with a bad boyfriend.
Yeah.
Right. Like, people should feel scared. And to Michelle's point, now we have to think about, well, given this uncertainty, given that most of the investment banks on Wall Street have cut their economic forecast, what can we do today?
Yeah.
And, you know, as you're thinking about this big purchase, I would think about the fact that people's expectations about unemployment is that it's going to rise. And our unemployment expectations is the highest that it's been since 2009.
Wow.
Right? And so I don't like telling people don't feel the uncertainty. You are a human being. We can't help but to do that. Now the question is, well, how can we protect ourselves? What can we do? Mm. Understanding that we can't control what we can't control.
Yeah.
So how do you start to answer that question? Because I guess the fear I would have about the fear is right. that it overtakes your decision making, and mm-hmm. then you make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then you say, all right, feel the fear. And then there has to be some action after that. And where does your thought go there?
So the number one thing I tell people is, you know your financial situation better than anybody else. And oftentimes you don't even know your spouse's financial situation, right? Like, many engaged couples don't even know how much their fiancé earns. And they're about to get ready to, you know, go to the aisle. So with that, you need to get your financial house in order, and all of that takes time. So I encourage people to take a financial health day. When you're sick, you take a sick day. When you're tired and you need a vacation, you take a vacation day. We need to get our financial house in order. And what do I mean by that? Calling your credit card company to lower your credit, your interest rate, that takes time. Figuring out how many 401ks do I have, because yeah, I had one true. From, this you know, job. 2008, that, job, 2000, that, job, yeah. That takes time. That takes you sitting down, remembering that password, resetting that password, going to 4 different login pages. So put in your calendar right now, I'm going to love myself enough to take a financial health day and get your financial house in order. And we can talk a little bit more in detail about what other yeah. items people can take. But the first thing is to allocate the time.
Yeah. By the way, we have a couple callers on the line. We have Mateo from Cherry Hill, has a business impacted by tariffs and wants to comment. Mateo, are you on Studio 2? What's your comment?
Good afternoon. Yeah, there's this quote that, I'll kind of piggyback off the last caller, but there's this quote that, worry and anxiety aren't express tickets on the train. They're just extra baggage. You were going there anyway. And I know that it might sound a little airy-fairy to some people, and I apologize for that. But for me, who, I'm impacted by this just like you are personally, but also professionally, really good opportunity for me to embrace kind of the truth of reality, which is that it's all unpredictable. And when I say that, I know that there's, some folks who might say, well, yeah, that's a nice thought, but I have, I need a practical answer. But the answer to that is there is no practical answer. Do we do the next indicated thing, like the last caller said, with regards to our financial situation? Yes. But ultimately, like, for example, even talking about this subject, hearing you guys on the radio conjures up like fear and anxiety. So it immediately does something to our responses. So we can take this opportunity to say, okay, Liberation Day, what does that mean for me? For me, it was the liberation. It was a spiritual liberation to say, okay, I've got a lot going on and there's a lot of fear and uncertainty, but I'm going to embrace the unknown, because at the end of the day, it's all really unknown.
Well, okay, thank you, Mateo, trying to step back, take a philosophical approach to all this.
I know, it's going to be uncertain, so let's just be uncertain. That's Mateo.
Although I would sort of suggest to Mateo, like, I don't know if there's that much good done in not talking about it, but but look, to each their own. We're going to keep talking about it this hour. And let me ask you, Michelle Singletary, you talked about looking at your, you know, your purchases, your potential purchases. What about your stock portfolio? Where do you start as you begin to interrogate that?
Well, you start by not looking. Don't look at it. I mean, you know that Netflix movie, Don't Look Up? Just don't look.
I'm doing the right thing.
No, yeah, don't look. You know it's down because you've been listening to the news. You don't need to know the exact number. That's going to add to your anxiety. I have not looked at my portfolio since the first set of tariffs were announced back in, what is it, March, before the Liberation Day. And the market started to trend down at that point with anticipation of more tariffs, but not at the level that we ended up at. So if you're in it for, you know, a little long haul and, you know, my husband's retired, so it's not as if we shouldn't look, but there's no point. We're not pulling money out right now. I didn't plan to pull out any money in the next several years. So there's no point in looking and rising your blood pressure.
Why not pull money out? Like, because there has to be someone listening right now saying, yes, that's what I plan to do. Why wouldn't you do that?
Well, if you're in retirement and you have, you're in with the withdrawal state, so you do withdraw from your portfolio to pay your expenses, you have to look and you got to withdraw, but you want to maybe pull back. So maybe you had a withdrawal rate of 4% or a target of 4% or 3%. Maybe you go down to 2%, which means you're going to cut some other things in your budget.
Right.
But if you've got 20, 10, 15 years to go, you don't want to pull out now for sure, because you're going to lock in those losses. And all we can do is look at the market historically. If we go back to the Great Recession, you know, lots of people said, I lost money. I lost all my money. Well, you lost it because you pulled it out. But if you stay put, you recoup those losses, and then you got more gains. And so that has always been the wisdom of the market. Now, we always have to say this, what happened in the past is not necessarily mean what's going to happen in the future. But historically, if you look at the market, it does recover from these periods. And I think also what's happening right now, during the Great Recession, there was an underlying major issue with our economy. There was the housing crisis. People were in loans they couldn't afford and all kinds of craziness going on. Right now, this is really manufactured drama, really. And it could change at any day. The administration could say, you know what, we were wrong. We need to pull back. Markets will bounce back. And so you don't want to pull out. In fact, I'm encouraging young adults, particularly. My husband and I have 20-some-year-old kids, and my 24-year-old, when I was in church on Sunday, texted me, Mommy, you had said we should get in the market. Should I get in the market now? And from the pew, I said two words, yes, ma'am. This is the time to get in there.
So this is the time where people, the stocks that maybe you had an eye on could be more affordable. Should you be upping your 401k contribution? I'm just wondering, like, are there things you could be doing to benefit from this? Because, you know, you see those little things floating down your social media saying people
buy the dip.
Exactly. Are there proactive things you could be doing at the same time protecting yourself?
So yeah, I don't do individual stocks, so I can't really comment on that. And that's, I think the average investor that I work with and know about usually are in the markets through their retirement plan, or perhaps they've got a 529 college plan. So, you know, mutual funds, things like that. You know, people will say buy the dip. That's really still trying to time the market. Mm-hmm. I actually like the idea of dollar cost averaging. And basically all it means is that you decide a certain amount of money you want to put in the market, no matter what. It could be on a monthly basis. That's what I do. In addition to putting money in my 401k, my husband and I have a non-retirement investment account. Every month we put a certain amount in, no matter what the market does. So right now our money is buying more of the shares in the low cost index funds that we have. And when the prices are high, we buy less shares. So we're not going to be spending too much on it at the high. Mm. And I think for the average person, that's probably the best way to get into the market right now. Mm. You know, with my daughter, I said, listen, go ahead, open up that account, get a low cost index fund, and then decide every month what you're going to put in it, and then stop watching what's happening on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and Wendy, I know you wanted to jump in there.
Well, I was just going to say, if taking a sort of more of a layman's approach, timing the market is not an effective strategy to lock in gains. Like, we have decades and decades of research that that's just not going to be a successful strategy. And so, like, I always go back to the wisest people that I know, which are my elders, to say the best time to start saving for retirement was yesterday. Mm. So whenever you can, just start saving. Whether that's investing in the market, whether that's padding your emergency savings account, whether that's increasing your retirement contribution. Again, all of these things take time. But what we want to understand is that we should have started yesterday. So let's start today. It's never going to be the most perfect, optimal time to do it. But for you, the best time to do it is today.
Yeah.
Right. One of the other things that I love what Michelle said, right, which was, how do we deal with the stress, right? Don't look at it. Don't increase your anxiety. But I actually think that it's about getting your financial house in order. So yes, we don't have to lock in those losses for our retirement portfolio right now, but there are things that we could do right now, understanding that there's a lot of uncertainty, understanding that people's, you know, unemployment expectations are on the rise, which is, okay, if I expect, which is most Americans are expecting unemployment to rise, like 2/3 of Americans are expecting unemployment to rise, then that means I need to skill myself up.
Skill.
So what is skill?
Yeah, I need to skill myself up. I need to make
sure
that...
Get ready for job disruption.
Exactly. Yeah. That means that everybody around me, I need to brush up my resume. Mm. I need to make sure that I'm on high impact projects. I need to make sure that everybody around me knows that I'm a high impact person. Because if I expect unemployment to rise, I want to protect myself from that, right? That means taking steps today to get my financial house in order.
Yeah,
I like the whole idea of taking action versus just waiting for the uncertainty. I feel less anxiety that way. Go ahead.
This is a YouTube comment from Chicken Parm, mm-hmm. who said, had to buy a new car in January, so I was already cutting back, stopped buying coffee, out. Pack my lunch most days. Not even going to look at my 403b savings. Probably working another 20 years yesterday. So another vote for the covered eyes approach. Let's bring in a caller now, mm-hmm. on line two. This is Joe from North Philly. And Wendy, you mentioned getting married. Yes. And I think Joe actually has a story for us about just that. So Joe, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I called because I'm getting married next year in August.
Congratulations. Congrats.
Thank you. We put it far away so we would have time to save. I had worked out the math. Like, if we were a little bit more careful than usual, we should be able to, you know, make all of those payments that we needed. But now with these, I've heard everything from like extra $3,000 to $7,000 a year per person on average. I'm worried about affording it. And, you know, we already got the contract for the venue, so I'm not sure how that's going to work out.
Yeah, because things could get more expensive. Yeah,
right, sort of locked into an expense that's maybe still a few months or a year away. That does feel like a precarious place to be. Mm-hmm. Michelle, I don't know if you have direct advice for Joe, but more for that type of situation where you're kind of pot committed to something and now you're worried about price increases in the near term. How do you start to, you know, navigate
that? So
Joe's
not on anymore, right?
No, we lost Joe, yeah.
All right, so if we hadn't lost Joe, one of the first questions I ask when couples say they're planning a wedding is, do you have any debt? And I would say if Joe and his intended has any debt, student loan debt, credit card debt, they should, you know you can get married for like $100. Yeah. That's all you need is a marriage license. And if either of them are in jobs where they feel are not secure, although none of our jobs are secure, really, I would be pulling back on that wedding right now. You can get out of those contracts. Maybe you have to pay, if you put down $1,000, you might lose that. But a lot of times people will continue to move forward with plans, even though they know they can't afford it, because they don't want to lose the money they put up already. But just think about that.
Sunk cost fallacy, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. You know, you put some money down on a cruise, but I can't afford the cruise. And so I'm going to still go. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know we don't want to lose that deposit, but if you really do know that you can't afford it, then you have to say that is the price I have to pay to be more responsible with my funds. Or in their case, just, you know, cut back the guest list, cut back all the other extras things that you do. You
so tough to do that when you're really looking forward to that.
And you've been planning
thing,
for well, years yeah. at this point, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, mm-hmm. whatever. That is so, I mean, I'm just not one of those people. If honestly, if you don't have any debt and you have an emergency fund and you're saving for your retirement and you've checked off all those boxes, you can have the kind of wedding that you want. But if you have not checked off all those boxes, I don't care how long you've been planning for a wedding. It is financially reckless to do that kind of thing. I mean, my husband and I teach a marriage and money class. And when couples mention that they're getting married, I ask them those questions. How much debt? And you'd be surprised, you know, $30,000, $40,000 in debt, $200,000 in debt. And then you're going to have a $40,000 or $50,000 wedding. That's the definition of insanity for me.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. And by the way, I want to encourage you, our listeners, to participate in the conversation. How are you dealing with the economic uncertainty? Are you adjusting your budget? Are you changing your future plans? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to leave your comment in the chat. I'm going to read a couple of YouTube comments. Lauren says, I've responded to the tariffs by stocking up on coffee.
That one keeps coming up.
People are scared about their coffee. Diana says, I've been on an essentials only budget since the inauguration. Anything else is either repair or buy secondhand, borrow from neighbors or friends rather than buy. Mm. Wow. And Eustace says, this is not bothering me one bit. I'm not counting millionaires and billionaires' money. So Eustace is like, I'm checking out.
Well, I want to read an email here from Jeff, who says, I am 1 year and 10 months from retiring at the age of 64. Do I ride out my 401k contributions and investments exposed to the stock market, or do I make changes? This is a tough one, Wendy. I don't know how much you can directly help Jeff, but this feels like the most dire situation for a lot of people who are looking to cash out soon. And the market now really matters to them and their day-to-day well-being. How do you start to address that?
So the first thing I want to address is that a lot of people have been on an essentials only budget, as our commenter said, for a long time, right? And so when we're having this discussion of, well, we have to pare back, usually it's food items, that's the number one top of mind budget category for people. People have already been doing that. Yeah. We know from earnings calls from all of these fast food restaurants that demand has been down for a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, in this particular situation, it's such a difficult place to be, because I imagine that this person is already on that type of budget. What I would say is, let's think about what are your different sources of income. So for most people, their 401k or their pension plan is not the only source of income that people get in retirement. We still have Social Security. And so to what extent can you ride out Social Security first before locking in those losses as a potential? Or what does your network look like? We are always talking about our financial decision making as sort of this individual pursuit. And that is just not the case for many people. We are part of family, society. So what does your retirement plan look like?
It's almost like opening up the decision tree here.
Exactly.
Instead of just thinking like I'm locked into this because I was planning to do this.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It just because as Michelle said, right, like this is not the time to try to lock in those losses. So anything that you can do from your community, from your family, from other sources of income to sort of cushion that before you lock in those losses, I think would be great.
Well, I hope you're locked into this episode of Studio 2, because we're going to be right back after a brief. Thank you for the laugh, by the way. I never get a laugh on my transitions. Thank you so much.
And on the other side, I really want to talk about if there's a potential recession, how you can sort of protect yourself from the impact of that. So if you want to participate in the conversation, how are you dealing with the economic uncertainty? The number is 888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Thank you. And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We're about to continue our conversation about how recession fears are impacting people. But first, we want to tell you that the next Studio 2 on the road is coming up.
Join us for a free live event on Thursday, April 24th at 6 p.m. We'll be at the Middletown Free Library in Delaware County for Developing the Philly Suburbs, NIMBYs, YIMBYs, and You. We'll be with a panel of local experts hashing out how the need for more housing often meets resistance because of a desire for open space, skepticism of developers, and backlash against sprawl.
And like Avi said, that event is free and open to the public, but you need to register beforehand at whyy.org/event. Events, excuse me, with an S. And we hope to see you in Delco on Thursday, April 24th at 6 p.m. at the Middletown Free Library. I hope I see you.
Thursday, April 24th, 6 p.m. Drill that into your head. Mm-hmm. But now, back to our conversation about how people are reacting to the stock market volatility and the threat of a potential recession. What should we be doing? What's the best way to protect ourselves? Can we? We have two guests with us. Michelle Singletary is the personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, and Wendy De La Rosa is an assistant professor of marketing at the Wharton School.
And our question for you at home, our listeners, is this: how are you dealing with the economic uncertainty? Are you adjusting your budget? Are you changing future plans? You can call us 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to leave your comments in the chat. We got an email from Jill who says, before 2025, I stocked up on toilet paper, soap, detergents, and dry food goods, canned food. I am hoping I am good until this trade war blows over. By the way, I plan on dying at work. I know I will never have enough funds to retire. So that's an email from Jill. I want to kind of shift the conversation. I know. But some people really do like working. That is another thing. But I want to talk about a potential recession. The percentage, the likelihood has gone up in recent days since the tariffs came out. And I want to talk about what you should be looking at in terms of your finances to sort of get yourself prepared and sort of shored up so that you can ride this thing out if it were to go there. And Michelle, I'll start with you, and then Wendy, feel free to jump in.
Well, I think Wendy really talked about this, you know, having a financial health day. It goes back to your budget, and you do know better than we do what's coming in and what's going out. Right now, what I'm telling people is to pull back. The likelihood of recession is increasing as long as these tariffs are on the table and there is no resolution. And so that means that there could be a lot of job losses. It could be you, and it could be connected. I mean, we are looking at all the firings in the federal government, but what about the people who service those people who do their hair and you know, the restaurants that are near these places where they had a lot of federal workers? All of this, we are all kind of in this together, connected. And so really, truly look at your budget, but not just that. Look at the big ticket items. Like, you know, I heard a lot of people talk about coffee. That's not what's going to put you out on the street. It's going to be not being able to pay your rent, or not being able to pay that car note to get you to your job. And so right now, for example, if you're coming out of college and you have the ability to go back home and live, you live in the same area where your parents are or relatives, I would be looking at that. Especially if you're coming out with student loan debt, if you've got a lease coming up and you can maybe, you know, that you're living paycheck to paycheck, things are really tight. You know, I would encourage you to see if there's some shared housing situation going on. So don't renew that lease that you could barely afford anyway. You know, look at that. And I have told and advise, you know, working adults in their 30s and 40s to say, hey, find a cousin or somebody that you can live with to cut your costs so that you can get a handle on your budget. So just, you know, and please, y'all, don't hoard. You don't need to hoard all the stuff in your pantry. What you need to hoard is cash. That is going to make the difference if we have a recession, to be able to pay your utility bill, pay your rent, pay your car note if you have a car note. You know, and a lot of people are saying, I'm going to rush out and buy a car. Well, if you have a $1,500 car repair, you're like, well, I have to get a car. No, you're going to fix that car for $1,500. Because last time I checked, talk to Wendy, she's the professor at Wharton, but $1,500 compared to the average used car price of a high $20,000 and the average new car $40,000. I don't know, Wendy, you tell me, but $1,500. just seems a lot less than $40,000 for a car. And so you got, those are smart kind of decisions you have to make. So you can be upset and fear and all that, but then on the other side, make these kind of decisions about how your money's going to be used, because in a recession, that job loss is the major thing. And people underestimate how long it will take for them to replace that job that they lose. So that means many months of trying to live off of your savings.
Michelle, if you were in my data analytics class, you would get an A. That's great math. And I could not agree more. I think there's a couple of things that I want to sort of call out too, which is, you know, what people are doing, we sort of term this doom spending, right? Sort of your hope for the future is through the basement. And so you feel like you have to buy everything now, buy that car now, hoard everything now. And I would caution people against that for all the reasons that Michelle said, but also because I want to figure out how you're funding that. So right now, our credit card debt as a country has reached $1.2 trillion. That's the highest. That's the highest since before the pandemic. That's the highest ever. Mm. And so if people are funding this type of sort of doom spending on credit card debt, let me tell you, that's just not going to be beneficial for you, because as interest rates rise, and that's what the bond market is sort of predicting now.
Suggesting now.
And as you continue to increase your credit card debt, that's not setting up your house in order. So that in the in the sad event that you may lose your job or that you may be unemployed, now you no longer have to deal with the loss of income. You also have to try to manage this increased debt. So how are you funding? That's sort of the question that I want to ask people. How are you even funding sort of this upfront investment in all of these household goods?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because if you're borrowing to help sort of ease your fear now, you might be setting yourself up for something worse down the road. Look, we have a lot of comments specifically about retirement accounts and 401ks, and I just want to read them in, get some more response to them. Martha on YouTube says, I'm really worried about my 401k. Killick says, I'm about 5 years away from retirement. I lost about $25,000 over the last 2 weeks. Should I pull some money out and invest in an annuity index fund? And now let me bring in a caller. This is Anne from Cherry Hill, who has a question also about her 401k. We're going to try to bundle all these together here as we get a little close to the end of the hour. Anne, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Thank you. I'll be brief. I'm 81 years old, and I have I purchased a new automobile 2 years ago. I don't have any outstanding debt other than the car. I get Social Security. I became disabled at age 55, so my Social Security is not at what it should be, and or could have been. Yes. Advice, please. $34,000 in the 401k.
Okay, so there's Anne. Could you respond to that, Michelle? And also, there was someone who asked about an annuity index fund as well. So can you enlighten us on both of those situations?
So I'm not sure what her question is, because it sounds like she's doing everything she possibly can. If she's collecting Social Security, she's cutting back, there really isn't anything that she can do except perhaps cut back some more if she can. Or if she's in a situation where she's got room in her house, or if she has a house, that might be a time to look for a roommate to help cut the cost. I mean, when we talk about these things, oftentimes we sort of say, oh, you know, coffee, but really, I always look at the big ticker items. That's housing, transportation, healthcare. Those are where you spend the massive amount of your dollars. And so I'm a big believer in shared housing. You know, my husband and I live in the Washington, D.C. area. We have a nice size house. We had all three of our young adult children living with us for several years. Two of them have moved out and bought their own home. We still have our son living with us. He's 27. He's still trying to make his way. He's comfortably living here. You know, he wants to go get an apartment. Like, you are not going to go get an apartment, because that's going to set you up for financial failure at this point in your life. And so for Anne, perhaps she's got the ability to get a roommate, and that would cut her housing costs if she still has a mortgage. I hope she doesn't have a mortgage in retirement, but she might.
Yep.
Or if she's in a, you know, two bedroom apartment, you know, maybe bring in a roommate, or perhaps find someone in, you know, that she can share housing with to cut the cost. That's where your savings is going to come from, mostly from the big stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the idea of annuity index fund and just sort of like reallocating how you invest. I mean, this is complicated stuff for everybody, and I think even for experts actually, to make calls on this type of stuff. But Michelle or Wendy, either of you have thoughts on that?
Okay, and you want to take this, Wendy, because annuities is like a whole nother show.
Sure.
I hear right that she said she was 81, right?
Yeah, well, that was the caller. This was a commenter, Killick, who was this was not someone in retirement age. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to be very careful with annuities.
Yeah.
They're very expensive. There's also a long period where you have to hold them. So like, let's say we go into a recession and you need that money. There's surrender charges that are very high. So, and also depends on what kind of annuity you have. I'm not a big fan of annuities.
Overall,
they're right for some people. But they're more often sold than bought. And I just think in this type of environment where people are scared, I think you need to be very careful about making those kind of moves with and tying up your money.
Yeah.
I'd like to add one point. Whenever people feel economic uncertainty, whenever there's fear, we have to recognize that there are people who prey on that fear.
Yes.
And sort of financial fraud typically comes up, whether that's romance fraud. And annuity has had a checkered past. I don't think this is a controversial statement that I'm saying. And so if you're thinking about annuities, I want you to go into that conversation understanding
eyes
that you have
open.
To do way more diligence on that financial product than any, I would say, most financial products. The other thing I want to sort of highlight to what Michelle has said on the opportunity of shared living, a couple of years ago, I worked with a company called Silvernest, and they were great because they took people over the age of 55 who were looking for housing or who had a room. And so the idea was sort of to increase the shared housing at reduced rates for everybody involved. But of course, there's a financial benefit to that. But one of the critical things that I think gets undersold is that one of the primary predictors of our longevity, how long we live, is the number of daily interactions we have with someone else. And so just even outside of sort of that financial potential, right, to reduce your housing costs, to get that additional income, whatever the case may be, it's just the ability that the recognizing that your life might just be fuller and richer because you have somebody who can look out for you, who can take you to the doctor's appointments, who can just go to the grocery store with you. And we underplay sort of the humanity of all of these financial decisions that we're doing.
Yeah, and I want to read a couple more comments and get a question in. Manuel says, tightening the purse strings and only purchasing the essentials. We both work for R1 University, so who knows what grant and funding and DEI changes might affect us on top of all the chaos Trump is dumping with tariffs and on top of that, including the rest of the world dumping T-notes and raising interest rates. I am just not going to be spending for now at all.
Wow.
Also, Jack canceled an order for new windows for their home, adjusted a beach vacation to a staycation. Too many family members are getting hit by the cuts. We will get by, but we have to keep the funds internal for now. And then Jim has this question. If we go into a recession, would it be a good time to refinance my mortgage? And Michelle, I don't know if you can answer that question. Like, is that a chance if the interest rate go down because of a recession? Is that a moment to sort of pop your head out the sand and get some stuff done?
Okay. So back just roll back to Jack. I love Jack. Everything he said was just right on point.
Yeah.
In terms of pulling back and pausing. Yeah. In terms of refinancing, I always ask people, you've got to look at the totality of your financial situation. You can't just look at interest rates. So let's say you're 15 years into a 30-year mortgage, and you're looking just at the interest rate, and you refinance, and then you refinance into another 30-year mortgage. Well, that's not smart. Now, maybe you refinance down to a 15, but that might cost you a little bit more. So when you are deciding these major financial decisions, you have to look at everything. And you can pay down your mortgage without refinancing. Just put money on the principal. That will shorten the length of your loan just as easy as it is to refinance. There's cost to refinancing. So please don't just look at the interest rate. Look at how this is going to benefit you long-term by refinancing. If you're new in a mortgage, just a couple years and you got in at the high and the rates go down, that may make more better sense. But if you are resetting a 30-year mortgage, mortgage again. That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Let me read in one more comment as we close the show. This is Kayla on YouTube who says, as an older Gen Z, planning for the future seems pointless. My baby boomer grandparents and Gen X parents would not be able to retire without student loans. Why should I expect to be able to? And so basically Kayla's attitude is whatever happens, happens. This it's kind of almost an economic doomerism, nihilism setting in for a young person. Is that what type of threat does that pose? Does it pose a threat to the economy writ large, Wendy?
Of course. So first I want to say to this young person, you are not alone. This is a common theme that we hear among Gen Zers. And for the first time, typically, if you look back 20 years, consumer sentiment amongst like 18 to 34-year-olds was always higher than consumer sentiment for anybody over the age of 55, right? I have my whole life ahead of me. I can take on the world. Yeah. The last four months, we've seen that trend reverse. And that's really worrisome because what does that mean? That means that that young person is less likely to start a job. That means that young person is less likely to make long-term investments. And what is the number one critical part of our collective GDP, because we're all in this together, is consumption.
Consumption, yeah. Right? That's worrying.
And so it is worrisome. And I would tell this one young person,
real quick,
and you gotta
get your house in order.
And you can get a sense of control from that sometimes too. That's Wendy De La Rosa, who is an assistant professor of marketing at the Wharton School. Just fantastic insight this whole hour. Same for you, Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist for the Washington Post. Thanks to you both for being here.
And thank you to our callers today and everybody who emailed and commented on YouTube and online. And thanks to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray-Besser, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm saving my money. I'm Jerry Craig.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you tomorrow.